At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speakers meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as a home group and attend a group conscious meeting. Hi, my name is Megan and I'm alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 22nd, 2012. And I kind of grew up in this program. When I was 8, my mom decided to get sober. She was suicidal, shock treatments, it was really bad. And I watched the miracle happen in her. So when it came time for me to come in the rooms, there was no denying that this program worked. And I continued to keep coming back despite my relapses. I started trying in 2009 to get this program, and it took a few learning experiences, research and development, to get it and to come back. Basically, I was faced with losing my career as a teacher. I'd spent like 5 years at UCF trying to be a guidance counselor and a teacher and all that stuff, and then I went to jail, and it was a misdemeanor, and the fact that I knew everybody when I got there from OBT and that all my friends were there was kind of a sign for me to wake up. And at the time, I felt like God was telling me to either to get this or to die, because I was really close to dying. So I'm just really glad you guys are all here. I appreciate you letting me do service. It's what keeps me sober, thinking that if I have to do this, then I have to face everybody and say I can't do it. It's embarrassing. So, yeah, that's me. Thank you. The group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your cell phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. Our speaker tonight is Billy. I first met Billy at Psychic Change, and he's a really good guy. He knows his stuff. I look up to him, and I'm really excited to hear him speak. Would you join me in welcoming Billy.
My name is Billy Stewart. I am a recovered alcoholic. I say recovered because that's what the basic text teaches. I know that's today. Based on a daily reprieve that's contingent to my spiritual maintenance. Let's see, my sobriety date is March 4th, 2012. My home group is the Forever Young Group, which is a small big book study in Castleberry. And, I guess to start the story, I have to start from the beginning. I was born September 1st, 1987 in Sanford, Florida. My mother and father are still together. They've been together for a long time. I grew up in a very loving family. I've never seen my family fight. I have a brother and a sister, older brother, older sister, 6 and 8 years older. I don't really remember much before like the age of 7. I don't know if I think I remember my kindergarten teacher. That was about it. I know around 7, I come from a family of partiers. We'd go out on the St. John's River and party every weekend. The whole family, aunts, uncles, friends of the family that we called aunts and uncles, and so forth. And I remember being the cute kid that ran and got the family a beer, you know. And once I was old enough, and I don't know when that was, to open a bottle top, I would take a sip before I'd bring the beer back. I don't recall ever feeling any different. I also remember when I was 7 is when I started playing football for Pop Warner, and I think that was probably like my first addiction. I remember dreaming a lot about football, sleeping with the football, as weird as that is, like kids would sleep with a teddy bear. Throughout elementary school I had what they called behavioral problems. They stuck me on several, I guess you could call narcotics and stuff like that to see if it would change my behaviors, but it didn't, so they took me off of those. My grades were never really good. And then somewhere, I think it was about 8 or 9, I think it might have been 9, my father got a better opportunity with work. He was an electrician, just like my grandfather was and just like I became. And he got an opportunity to become like a draftsman for an engineering firm. And we moved to Winter Park, or the east side of Orlando, but into Winter Park school districts. And I remember going there that I was put into like slow learning disability classes, and I was definitely really bad behavioral coming from Sanford to Winter Park. And I spent a lot of time in the principal's office, a lot of times not going to recess. I make a joke these days, I wasn't allowed to recess because I don't even play. but it's true, I didn't play nice. And I found out at a young age that the cops get called if you put your hand on others. I think I was about 11 in the neighborhood. And in Sanford, we'd like set up fights. The older kids would set up fights and all that, but that wasn't allowed in the new neighborhood. And then I think it was about, I was 12 years old. I was a year younger than everybody in my grade. And I'd also hang out with a lot of the older kids. And I was 12 years old, and I was going into ninth grade. I was the summer before ninth grade. And I went over to a friend's house, and they had like wine. It was Cisco. It was like this cheap wine. It was, I remember the flavor was strawberry, and there was like six of us, and I think we had four bottles of it, and I probably drank two bottles of it, and most of my friends, you can sit there, you just move the book. Most of my friends were throwing up, falling on the floor, and I really didn't feel too much different. I liked the feeling that I had. I definitely was intoxicated. It felt great, and somehow the parents kind of caught on to our stuff, and I veered away from it for a little while. I managed to lie to my parents, which I was doing often at the time, and tricked them into, or manipulated them into believing that I wasn't drinking. And I think it was somewhere around when I was 14, I went over to my friend's house. I had a best friend. His name was John Brown. We played football with each other. We started playing football with each other at the age of 7. And we were always hanging out together, and we went into his dad's liquor cabinet, and we were taking shots, and our other friend was sitting on the couch, and we're back there laughing, and he thought we were making fun of him, but he actually found out that we were drinking, so he decided to drink with us. And I remember we took something like 27 shots apiece of liquor, straight liquor, and then our friend took maybe like 9, and he was throwing up and passed out in the bathtub. And me and John went to sleep with a mild case of the spins. But the next morning was we woke up hungover, and I was like, John, we drank a lot of liquor. We're probably alcoholics. And he was like, of course we are. Look at our families. And it was true, because both our families, there's a lot of alcoholics, you know. I believe personally that I was born an alcoholic. I was born in, you know, hereditary to alcoholism. And he's like, well, I heard if you drink a beer that, you know, this headache and all these symptoms will go away. So we started drinking that morning. And that was the second time that I got drunk. And it felt great. I loved it. For me, I never was one of the people that, like, you know, I never got picked on till I came to AA. I never felt, you know, like out of my skin all the time. It just, that wasn't the case for me. I always had a lot of friends. You know, I always was, you know, just kind of one of those guys. I maintained friends with many different groups. And a lot of people liked me, and I liked a lot of people. And then I was still playing football, and it was about my 10th grade year. John went off to rehab for his first time, not long after we drank that stuff, so he went out quick. I started getting letters from colleges for football, and started looking at this and that, going, you know, I'm still in these SLD classes. That was another thing. Like, if I could ever do the least amount of work to get, you know, the same result, that's what I'd do. So I was getting good grades, because it was like mostly classes for people that didn't speak English, and I spoke English, so I would like naturally get A's. So I loved them. I loved the SLD classes. I mean, slow learning disability, and I could maintain my grades, and I was getting letters here and letters there, knowing that I couldn't go here. because of my academics, and I could go here, and I ended up deciding to go visit the Florida Atlantic University, the Owls. They're down in Boca Raton, and I was looking at that. And then the spring season of my junior year, I tore my ACL. And I don't know when it was, but I know it was right after that. It was kind of like, and you know, in between that time, you know, on the weekends, going to parties with the friends, doing stupid stuff, hitting mailboxes with baseball bats, attacking Santa Claus, you know, all that stuff. But it never got really out of control. I could go 3 weekends without it, and I can go 3 weekends on it, you know. But right about that time where the ACL was torn, I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to college, and if it was going to be one, it was going to be community. So somehow I turned over like Luke Skywalker, turning from, like, you know, the good side to the evil side, going into the dark side, I guess you could say. And I started making up concoctions of drinks before school, you know, in a Zephyr Hills bottle, all the clear liquors, all the white liquors of my parents' cabinet. And I would drink them before school. And before the end of my junior year, which spring comes basically right there at the end of the year, I was arrested at school for possession. That was the first time I seen my father cry, and it hurt me. And I vowed off. I swore it off drinking. I swore it off, you know, all of it. And it didn't last very long. I was back to drinking in no time. By the beginning of my senior year, I was constantly fighting with my parents. I was totally negligent on the whole chores and listening to mom, and, you know, just constantly talking back, constantly drinking, still drinking in the mornings. And my mother kicked me out, and I dropped out of high school at 16 years old. And things went really downhill after that. I moved in with my brother. He was living over by UCF. And I remember, like, I walked in, and there was a kegerator, which is like a refrigerator that pours beer for you. And it was like the coolest thing ever, you know. I started having parties every single night, totally screwing over my brother there, wrecking the place on a nightly basis, even all the way through for days straight at times. And I ended up breaking this guy's jaw at a different party. And he pressed charges, and they made me move back in with my parents. And I tried to tone it down a little bit, and I swear I wasn't going to do it. My parents were like, oh. I remember going to court, meeting my parents there, and the judge told them that, and they're like, oh, man. Because they knew I was going to be a disaster. And when I moved back in with them, I'm like, no, I'm gonna, you know, get a job. I'm gonna do good. Well, I got a job, and I did good at my job, but I didn't do so good at the no drinking thing. And I mean, there would be times, because I wasn't 20, I was 17 years old at the time. I was working at Sonic's Drive-In. I got moved to the first assistant manager very quick, and I was saving money. It was so hard to get people to buy me alcohol that whenever I would, I'd be stupid and be like, oh yeah, just give me a 12 pack. And then I'd get back to my parents' house and I'd be like, oh, I need another 12 pack. So I'd drink my mom's 12 pack and then my dad's, you know, whiskey. All of it, you know? And there's been a couple times where I try to hide it with water, but there's not much you could do with a dark liquor at that point. And they're getting upset, obviously. So they told me the day I turned 18 I had to get out, and that's what I did. And I went and got an apartment over in Castleberry off Oxford Road. That was my first apartment. And within, I don't even know, see, it's such a blare to me, I don't even know if I paid that next month's rent before I was evicted. I can't even tell you if I did. I know it was not long after my 18th birthday. I was down on Paramore and Gore begging them to take me into detox. And they did. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that, like, you know, I'd be in such bad shape. I'd lose everything. And I'd go to detox, I'd check myself in, I'd beg them, please, please let me in. They'd be like, you know, you're not really that drunk. And I'd be like, all right, I'll go get more drunk and come back. And you know, and then they would let me in, and in 3 days I'd be feeling good, and I would know that I can't leave after 7 o'clock at night. So I'm like, oh man, it's getting to 7. Let me check myself off. You gotta let me out of here. I'd be hounding them like, it's about 7. Please get me out of here, because it was time to go drink again, you know. And I did that for a while. Finally, I did go to I was still 18. I went to the Center of Drug for Living Men's Residential, and there, I don't remember them taking us too much to meetings. I remember a couple of meetings coming in, and I didn't listen, and I didn't get a sponsor. That was just cold fact of it. I just didn't care. And I ended up drinking heavily. Me and another guy, we were at Best Buy. They took us to the movie theater. We ran across to Best Buy and stole something, ran to the pawn shop, pawned it, and one got ourselves some booze, you know? And that was all in there. And then they caught us, of course. And we were loaded, and they let us stay. And I ended up at, what's the place you talked about earlier? The Fellowship? Foundation for Life. Foundation for Life. It's over off Orange Avenue. And I got a sponsor. They told me to whenever I got out of rehab. They're like, get a sponsor, work the steps. So I got a sponsor. He's like, all right, you're going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, we're gonna get into the big book. We're going to get into the 12 and 12. We're going to do the deal, you know. And I think I was around 3 months there. I remember coming here to Central, going to a bunch of other meetings. I remember reading Bill, Doctor's Opinion and Bill's story. I was still 18. And I got about 90 days, and I decided that I wanted to go get my own place. So I went to the next street over and got a house, rented a house, and I had a good job at the time. I never had problems with work. They had problems with me. So I would I went over there, and I immediately started drinking again. And within 2 weeks of being there, maybe 1 week of being there, I was back in Paramore and Gore. And I checked myself out and got drunk again. I begged them again, and I did that again. I think I might have done that 3 or 4 times. And then I ended up at the recovery house in Sanford. And I stayed there for 7 months. I drank twice while I was there and didn't tell anybody. And at this point, I was about 3 months sober. I had a sponsor. I was maybe on step two again. Step one or step two. And instead of drinking, I got into stealing. I was like, yeah, this feels great. So like, I was just like, you know, had a pocket full of money, just stealing stuff. Stuff I don't even like, you know, like nerds and stuff like that. And candy and all types of stuff. Well, then I went to Sears in Oviedo Mall. So on the way to my parents' house. It was January 1st, 2007. And it was right when it opened in the morning. It was like 9 in the morning. And I decided to steal the GPS. There's a Magellan. It was on display. And they ended up chasing me around that parking lot. And needless to say, with all the cigarettes I was smoking, I ran out pretty fast, and they got me. And come to find out, the Magellan was totally hollow. It didn't even work. I was the eighth person booked in Seminole County that year. I was already on probation because I was already like addicted to stealing before that, and did some really bad stuff and was facing some really bad charges. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to prison over a fake Magellan. And they reinstated. They gave me. I stayed in there for a little while. I did a lot of time in jail throughout my life. I stayed there for a little while. I never, you know, I always hear people like, ah, just bond it out. I was like, really? What's it like? Because I've never had a bond. They let me out and they gave me community control, and I knew that was a fail from the beginning because I had to write where I was every hour of the day for a week straight, and they'd come check on me, and the next week I'd go and I'd write it again. And I got out of there, and in there I planned it all. I'm like, hey, I'm going to get out. I'm going to get my brother's ID. I just turned 19. I was like, I'm going to get my brother's ID. I'm going to be going to the bars, having a blast, you know. And that's what I did. And it was a bad idea. I ended up I moved in with my grandmother then, and my grandmother was married to two alcoholics. One was my grandfather that I know as my grandfather, who died just a week and a half ago, 24 years sober in AA. Also, the grandfather that was actually my real grandfather, who died at 39 of cirrhosis of the liver from drinking. So she already knew the deal. I told her, I said, I got, you know, real hammered and, you know, was like, Grandma, I can't even drive. She was like, well, when you can, come get your stuff because you ain't staying here. And I said, all right. So I moved in with some friends. They kicked me out because I partied too hard. Drank too much. And then I moved in again with my best friend, John Brown. Bad idea. It was chaos from the get-go. And John ended up overdosing, and they resuscitated him. I called the paramedics. They resuscitated him. They brought him back to life. And I decided I was going to move in with my parents and get my life straight. My parents were scared because they just seen my best friend die and get resuscitated, or just heard about it. They thought that was going to be me. They knew that was going to be me. And they decided to let me back, and I got my new community control officer. I was living with them over in Oviedo, and this guy wasn't like the other guys. You know, he wasn't like the other community control officer. This guy was up my ass. And I think it was the third night I was there. I was like, all right, wait for my parents to go to bed. Community control officer is definitely going to be in bed by 1 o'clock. I'm going to pop out the window, jump in my car, and ride out to Biflo and get hammered. And that's what I did. And next thing you know, my phone starts going off. And it was a community control officer, then my parents, then the community control officer, and then my parents. And then I'm like, all right, I got the best idea in the world. I'm going to run to the Florida Keys. I'm going to pitch a tent. No one's ever going to find me. So that's what I did. Needless to say, I was stopped short in Boca Raton by a cop dog. Ended up in the hospital because the K-9 was a lot faster and had bigger teeth than me. And ended up doing a good amount of time incarcerated. I decided that there, God put me in, whatever God this was, there must be a God. Maybe he put me in incarceration for a long time so I could decide how, so I could figure out how to drink reasonably, like a gentleman, you know? And so I got out and I tried to drink like a gentleman, and I hated it, and didn't last long. Didn't even last the first day. And it went really bad from there. Within the next 2 to 3 years, I would try to come in the rooms, get a sponsor, and I would last 60 days, 90 days, 60 days, 30 days, 30 days, 90 days kind of deal. And then finally I said, obviously I can't get what they have, so screw it. I'm just going to go be miserable, drink myself away. And then I went the last time before the last time that I came in, I went back out for 6 months and said, you know what, AA has nothing to offer, the 12 steps has nothing to offer, the God thing's probably just a bunch of hoopla, and I'm just going to live this way for the rest of my life. And in that 6 months, I did what I thought I would never do, and that was I stole from my parents, who I love very much, and I felt really bad. So within a couple weeks, I stole from them again. And then I felt really bad again. And then within a couple weeks, I stole from them again. And they told me, we don't ever want to talk to you. We don't ever want to see you. Don't come around here. We'll call the cops. And I left them alone. I didn't. Because I would call and I would like threaten suicide if they didn't probably give me money or whatever it was, whatever I wanted, you know. And in that 6 months, I did that, and there were some other bad things, of course, came along the way, and I ended up broke down 131 pounds, suicidal, completely suicidal, crazy in the head, just absolute chaos in my head, put myself in horrible, horrible situations. Paranoid, completely paranoid, and just really at the point to off myself, and I decided how I was going to go. Actually, I planned my death, and then something told me, it was what I believe it was God, today, to go back to rehab, give rehab another shot, give the AAs another shot. Which I seen, you know, I got an uncle with 18 years, cousin with 7, the grandfather had 20 something at the time, you know, and more in my family, 15, and with an aunt. And I called, I had insurance because something happened with the government or something. I wasn't watching TV or nothing at that time. And I had insurance under my mom's insurance. And I was 24, and I called a couple rehabs, and I got a hold of one in Jacksonville, and it was called Lakeview Health Systems, and it was a 41-day program. So I seen that it was co-ed. I was like, all right, I'm going. I seen the pictures. It kind of looked like a little like Courtyard Hilton, you know. I was like, this place is sweet. So I went. I got there, and within like 8 hours, I found the girl that I went to look for, and I started figuring out how I was going to get her on the insurance plan and the white picket fence and the dog and all that there, you know. I was like, we're going to go to Chuliota, life's going to be great, you know. She left like when I was probably, yeah, I was 3 weeks into the program, or I was coming up on my 3 weeks, and she left. And then I started actually listening to the AA meetings, and there was a group of these what we call big book thumpers. They were bringing in the meetings, and some of these guys had over 40 years, 20 plus years, and then some had under 1 year, you know. Some had 1 month, but I started listening to them. And then I was like, you know, these guys are full of shit. I've never heard this stuff before, you know. I've been to many meetings, and I've never heard what these guys were talking about. So, you know, I felt like arguing, which I love to argue. And I waited till after the meeting. I went up to the guy with like 40 plus years, and I'm like, yeah, I know I have less than 4 weeks, but I'm telling you, you're wrong, you know. And I'm telling him all this stuff about how wrong he is. And I said, no, you know, I've been around the room since I was 17, you know, 7 years. And, you know, it doesn't work, first off. It made it work for you, but you're not like me. And, you know, what you're talking about, you know, you're not supposed to talk about because it's not true. And he said, shut up and sit down. And I was like, all right, well, state your case because I'm still going to tell you you're wrong. So I sat down all cocky like, you know, and it took him about 3 minutes to convince me, if that. It probably took a minute to tell you the truth. And he opened up the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the basic text. And he got down to causes and conditions. And he said, yeah, you're a hopeless alcoholic. And I was like, thanks, asshole. I know, because I knew, you know. I was like, I know, I've told you this. You know, it can't work for me. Might work for you, but it ain't going to work for me. And he said, well, you know, why don't you work the steps and prove me wrong? And I said, that's fine, I'll do that, I'll try this. So next thing you know, I don't know how long it was after, it wasn't too long, because I had my medication coming up within like an hour. I was on my knees in the eating area there, the cafeteria, with three other men, and we said the third step prayer. And I don't know when my spiritual awakening was, but that prayer changed my life. It changed my life. It surely did. And I was like, hey, what page was that on? He's like, 63. So I, you know, made a little mark in 63, and I memorized that prayer in there. And I was saying it a lot. It meant a lot to me. Okay, it started, life seemed like to start making sense. And he showed me the book where it said, you know, we launched out onto a course of vigorous action. And he said, so that's, now you're going to start your four step right now. And I did it. It took me like 7 days to write my fourth step. It was like 6 days of freaking out and worrying about it, and 1 day of sitting my ass down writing it. And I had a fat fourth step. I really did. One full day just sitting there writing. I was going to group therapy. They let me out of rehab early. See, these guys like fueled my fire. I started bringing my big book to group therapy. I wasn't allowed to do that anymore. I started realizing the stuff that they were teaching me. really wasn't the answer, that the answer was right there in that basic text for a guy like me, you know. Carl Jung told Roland Hazard that he was a chronic alcoholic, and also that's what the doctor's opinion said too, you know. Silkworth said it was a chronic alcoholic, and there is a solution that talks about the real alcoholic, and Bill was calling it hopeless, and that was me, you know, and that's the type of thing I needed was a spiritual solution, and I knew it was true, and so I was telling them they were wrong, of course. And I was waiting on my four-step. I was waiting to, so I waited for the guy to come back. I asked him if he would, you know, be my sponsor and do this fifth-step thing with me. And he said, no, it's going to be this guy. And it happened to be a guy that I was telling my roommate, no, don't let him sponsor. He doesn't have 10 years because he had like 7 months, right? Well, he ended up being my sponsor. I was like, all right. And so that next week, they let me out like a couple weeks early. I think 33 days, so they let me out like 10 days early or something like that. And I went, I chased the girl. The girl was at another co-ed place, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go get her. We're going to get that Chuliota house. And I got there, and then she was actually, I had like the first night. I remember because this is when it all kind of like worked. It all made sense. The guy that was in my room with me was like, yeah, man, I'm talking to this girl. I'm like, oh, yeah, what's her name? And he says her name, and I was like, oh, that's my wife, man. And it hurt. I really did, because I was like cuckoo in the head, you know. And I'm sitting there praying. I'm like, God, take it. And it wasn't going away. And I was like, man, I'm putting on that four step. So I'm waiting at like this place. They were like, you know, 30-day lockdown. And the guy that was sponsoring me was telling me like, no, don't go there because then it's so hard to get to you to do the steps. And I was like, yeah, but I have to. And he's like, why? And I didn't tell him why. Or I might have. And so I wrote her on the four step and I shared it with somebody. I went up to her and I made amends. And I told her I was sorry for getting involved with her whenever it was just way too fast, you know. And boom, it was gone. It was gone. I asked God to remove it and it was gone. And then I was like, oh, I need to do these steps. So I was like, I got to get out of this place. And I had a mud truck with my brother, so I was like, sell the truck, let's get money and send it to me, and I'll get into this other halfway house. It's called Traditions House in Riverside, Jacksonville. And he got me in there, or he sent me the money, sold the truck, sent me the money. I got in there, and my sponsor took me there, but he had to go to work. That next day he came by, he took me to a park. We went over the fifth step. He told me about, you know, some character defects, selfishness and self-centeredness being the two primary ones that he wanted to talk about. a lot of other things, jealousy, envy, you know, list goes on. There was about 20 of them that he told me. I was just like, he told me to go home for an hour and transfer the names over to another list, and we'd go over that another time. And go into page 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, so forth, and start doing what it says when it says when we retire at night, and then do what it says when it says upon awakening. I didn't even know that was the 10th and 11th step. And he said, now I want you to go every Tuesday back to your treatment center that you were at with me, and we're going to do a meeting. And I also want you to go every Monday and Thursday to the primary purpose group Big Book Study. With me off 103rd on Westside Jacksonville. And it happened to be that big book study was a lot of the guys that were bringing those meetings in. It happened to be like a legit, that's what we do at my home group now. It's a legit big book study, sentence by sentence, you know. And it saved my life. It really saved my life. I started doing that, and like I said, I don't really know when my spiritual awakening came, but I knew it came because I got a job at Regency Electric, and what I'd have to do is get up at 3:30 in the morning. I'd have to hustle over to the bus stop. There's a quarter mile away. Jump on with my tools, you know, my drill, my bag, everything, my hard hat, and ride to the other side of Jacksonville. I don't know if you guys know, but Jacksonville is like this. I was lost the whole time I was there. It's a huge place. And I'd ride a few buses all the way to the other side of Jacksonville. I'd get off the bus at 6:30 and have to jog 2 miles with tools and be there by 7. Really like 6:50 if you want to keep them happy. And I was doing that, and a guy came up to me and said, "Man, I seen you jogging in the rain with your tools and stuff. What's going on with that?" I was like, "Yeah, I don't got a car." And he had a license. And he was like, "Well, where do you live?" I was like, "I kind of live like on the west side of Jacksonville in Riverside." He's like, "Well, why don't you catch this bus, go up by 275 in Orange Park. It'll be a lot easier for you. You can ride with me." I said, "Sure." Well, let me tell you something. Riding with that guy was like watching my insanity all over again. This guy was crazy. And all I know is I didn't want it. And it was offered every day. Every morning and every day. At the end of the day and every morning. Everything was offered to me. And I didn't want it. So I don't know when the spiritual awakening came. I just knew that it came because I wasn't the type of guy to turn down the drink, you know. Especially with no accountability living up in Jacksonville at a place that wasn't even breathalyzing people. And even if they were breathalyzing people, I'm not the guy to turn down a drink. When I went back to the treatment center with them, we really started getting in depth into the big book in those meetings. Outside of those meetings, we really started getting in depth with the big book, studying the basic texts, the first 164, and also Dr. Bob's Nightmare. And I really got into it. I started listening to speaker CDs, speaker big book studies, Joe and Charlie tapes, all that, you know, the whole nine. California Rob before I was even living in Orlando. And all of a sudden this kid came up to the guy that was sponsoring me and he's like, "Hey, will you be my sponsor?" He's like, "No, but Billy will." And I was like, "I got 90 days." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, you're sponsoring him." And needless to say, I took that kid through the steps and he's still sober today. Pretty crazy. He's 19 now, and he's been sober for well over a year now. You know, probably about 14 months. And I actually took him through his steps in 4 days. He was really on it, and he had a pretty in depth 4-step. But right then I got on fire. Well, I was already on fire with the big book, and then I got on fire on helping the other people, and then I realized, you know, maybe this whole deal with me being selfish, maybe I could become selfless by helping others, you know. So around 6 months I got laid off from my job. We finished up the church that we were building, and I wanted to move back down to Seminole County. I always said I would never live outside of Seminole County, and I did. I moved into a halfway house in Altamont Springs, and I got there and there was a bunch of young guys. And they're like 90 days, 4 months, you know, 3 months. Oh, yeah, like 2 months, 4 months, 3 months, all that. I'm like, "Yeah, who's your sponsor? What step are you on? You know, what's going on with you?" You know, "Oh, this is my sponsor. I've had him for 90 days. I'm on step 2. I was like, "Oh, yeah, I used to do that too." I was like, "But, you know, let's read this book. Let me see what the book says." And we started getting into the book. And I was blessed enough to take one of those guys through the steps today, and kind of manages my house. We'll get into that. We can get right into that, actually. The guy that was running the house hated the fact that I took the kid through the steps in like 5 days. You know, he's like, "Can't do that." I was like, "I did." And he's still sober today. So he was kind of screaming at both of us, and I started, you know, it's funny because like I would always hear, like I'd always mention what's going on in my life, and I'd always get these suggestions and opinions, and half the time I just didn't do them, and sometimes it turned out bad, and sometimes it turned out like to be a big difference in my life today. And I kind of just went with my gut, what I thought God would want, and I switched my careers from electrical to metal fabrication, and within not even 2 months there, I was promoted to supervisor of the company. And today I have my own company. I still didn't have a car, still didn't have a license. But I took all the money I had that I was saving for the license and the car, and I went and got a house down the street. And that guy and two other guys moved in with me. And the one guy that worked the steps, he's still there. But the two guys that didn't work the step, needless to say, they're not there anymore. But anyways, you know, that house all of a sudden, like it was actually like a really nasty house. We had to clean a lot and do a lot of work. Still need a lot of work. It was actually a meth house, to tell you the truth. I'm kicked out of there now. Like, I don't even live there anymore because so many people heard of it. I never asked anyone, hey, you want to live here? You know, just kind of word of mouth, I guess you could say. Bunch of people live there now. It's a 5-bedroom house, 5 guys living there. Well, it's 4 right now, so I guess I could stay there. But then my grandfather, I knew he was about to go, and I really wanted to get in with him and be there a lot for the last days there. And I was blessed enough to feed him his narcotics with no one around and really talk to him. And he was sponsored by a guy that was sponsored by a man named Clarence Snyder, who most of us know here. And we seem to have a lot of the same beliefs on the program of AA. I'm real grateful today that I was able to do that, because that was a big test. Because at that point, I was kind of going through a lot. You know, like for instance, my best friend John Brown, my 6 months of sobriety, my 25th birthday, he overdosed and died. And, you know, spending time with my grandfather and watching a man that I love dearly die. And, you know, at that point, I was like, I got the stomach flu twice in 3 days. I was like, really? My eyes were swollen shut. I had some type of allergic reaction that no doctors do. They're just like, yeah, you're allergic to something. God just, I like laugh at situations like that, you know. Like, God really just carried me right through that. Today, my thing is, you know, it's kind of, I guess you could call it like a 3-step program. Trust in God, clean house, and help others. And I like to do treatment center meetings. So I do those. I prefer going to big book meetings. I remember when I got this sponsor last time, he didn't tell me to do 90 meetings in 90 days. He told me in the first 90 days, I want you to only go to treatment centers and big book studies. And that's it. So I don't care how many times you go, but that's the only places you're going. Today I've been blessed to sponsor, for the little bit of time I've been here, I would say a lot of people. And actually get a chance to bring a lot of them through the steps. I keep in touch with a lot of people from treatment. And there's only 3 of us left, 2 girls and me. And needless to say, from what I know, we're the only 3 that ever worked the steps. I like to read a lot about recovery. I mean, it saved my life, so I love it. I was watching the news the other day. It's like every 3 minutes, a woman gets put in the emergency room for overdosing. A woman, just alone, a woman. And they're talking about how the numbers were up so high that it's just ridiculous. And I remember, because I died, you know, I died once, and they brought me back. And it just makes me really, really think. It made me really think back at that point when I overdosed and flopped out. It just makes me think, like Bill had that thought, you know, how many more alcoholics he could help that are out there that haven't heard the message, you know. So I really try as hard as I can to carry the message for what it is, you know. And at my meeting, if I'm chairing a meeting, I really don't like whenever the message is not being carried or if it's watered down. I believe it's a very serious thing for people to come in and work the steps. My belief, and this is my belief, you know, is that the idea of taking your time on the steps needs to be squashed. I believe that's one. I think if I would have came in, that kid I came in at 17 years old and worked the steps, I think that the same thing would have happened, because I didn't really want to get sober this last time, you know, and I didn't think it could happen. I think I would have stayed sober, and if I didn't, I would have stayed sober a lot longer than 2 months. And a seed would have been planted, a bigger seed than just not believing it was going to work. So if I could like carry a message to a newcomer, the message that I carry to the guys at the treatment center, you know, I don't ever suggest to not do what your sponsor says. You know, please do what your sponsor says. But if your sponsor suggests and you take your time on the steps, I suggest you get a new one. Also, what's in the big book, you know, really does work. The instructions laid out in the big book does work. And so you got to really watch what you hear inside the fellowship and inside the meetings. I know people really hate when I say this, but the fact is, not everybody around here is real alcoholics, you know. And it's all perception, you know. It's all perception, you know. From the next guy to the next guy, you know. If I'm sponsored, and if I do a fist step with an alcoholic and do a fist step with a guy that was smoking crack, I mean, there's a big difference. So, really look at if the message is being carried from the book. And share, you know, stay away from the opinions. And you'll get the same blessings that I get. You'll get the same promises. I think the biggest promise that this book gave me was the 10-step promise. And it talks about being, that's the miracle of it, you know. And that's the miracle for me. And the little bit of 16 months that I do have might not mean much to y'all, but it means a lot to my family. A lot to my family. I got a key to my parents' house today. I stay over there, you know. I'll sleep over there 3-4 times a week. I can go. I went to my sister's wedding. I had a few more amends to make that I haven't got around to. And I went to my sister's wedding like a month ago. And I happened to be the usher or whatever, the guy that sits there at their place. And I look at him like, oh man, the last two people, you know, that was it. And the burden that came off of that was just so much freedom. You know, it was like, I believe I'm so busy that I couldn't have just drove out to Longwood, even though I go in between Longwood and Oviedo every single day from Altamont to Oviedo, you know, and stop by and say that. If I would have known how good it was going to feel to finally look someone in the face and say, hey, you know, I was a wreck of my past and I'm sorry that you're a part of that, but I'd really love for you to be part of my future. So if there's anything, and I literally mean anything, that I can do to change that, I will. And the look in their face, you know, knowing that I was being sincere, and just knowing that it was okay. And most of them just tell me, Billy, just don't go crazy. You know? If I would have known that the burden off of that there was bondage in just those last two people on my 9-step. It talks about, you know, in the 10-step, resting on our laurels, you know, on page 83. And they're talking about, you know, resting on our laurels as far as getting the restitution done. You know, as far as that, I mean, I'm still making amends to IRS. But it's coming. I mean, there's a payment. But today, you know, I've had 3 cars since I've been sober. I didn't even have a license or a car. I walked into rehab. When I walked into rehab, I had a garbage bag, half full. It was a scented garbage bag, which is always great. I think it was lavender. It was half full of clothes that I don't even wear anymore. And I had flip-flops with a hole in it. I bought, like, on the bottom part of it was a hole. I was 131 pounds. And I had a pair of these boots that I'm wearing now. That's all I had. And today I supervise a company. I own a company. You know, I have peace of mind. I definitely didn't have that then. I'm comfortable in my own skin when it comes to having to look people in the eyes that are not like me. I deal with a lot of people that are very successful people. The house, I get to help a lot of people through that house that they kicked me out of. The drunk said, you got to go, we got to have a place to stay. And then the treatment centers, you know. And I had to put my truck in the shop today, actually. But, like, that's a blessing. I remember when they gave me a bank account. I was like, oh, my gosh. I called, like, 4 or 5 people. Like, bro, listen, they just gave me a bank account? What? And then they gave me a car. I was like, dude, they financed me on a car. It's hilarious. And now I'm going through the process of closing on a house. I'm actually hoping that I'm going to get denied because I got to change my mind on that particular house. So, I mean, that's crazy. In just 16 months, you know, when really the big change came as far as the materialistic bullcrap, you know, have like 10 months, so about 6 months. And that's it. You know, that's really all it is to it. I thank God. I love AA, the fellowship, and the program with every fiber of my being. It saved my life. It was awesome that my grandfather could tell me, "I'm proud of you," before he passed, and not have to see me doing all that crazy stuff and not have to worry about me stealing his medication. Just have to give it away, and that's it. Thank you.